Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome to News and Views. I'm your host, Rob Schofield. Well, fall is officially upon us, but unfortunately, so too is the COVID-19 pandemic. This past week saw the national death toll surpass 200,000, and despite some smatterings of good news here and there, the outlook remains sobering. Here in North Carolina, Governor Roy Cooper continues to look for small ways to safely reopen long-shuttered parts of society, at least on a limited basis, from gyms to outdoor sporting events. Of course, one reopening discussion that remains subject to passionate debate is what to do about our public schools. Recently, the governor gave a go-ahead to local districts to move toward more in-person instruction, but many people remain deeply concerned at this prospect. Earlier this week, I got a chance to discuss some of those concerns and to learn more about how teachers are coping with the pandemic with the president of the North Carolina Association of Educators, Tamika Walker-Kelly. Well, Tamika Walker-Kelly, welcome back to News and Views. Sure good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me on today.
The school year is underway, although we know there are a lot of exceptions that have been made for some students who have special needs. Talk to us about how you think we're coping with the start of the school year as one of our state's leading education spokespeople.
Well, I will say that our members and educators across the state have continued to show their professionalism and their dedication to their craft. They have shown up under difficult circumstances to provide education for our students all across the state. I will acknowledge that some of our members and educators are not in school buildings, that education is continuing. And so our educators are using every tool at their disposal to reach families, engage with students, find rich and engaging ways to share content. Even in the midst of, like I said, the circumstances are extremely challenging and they're fluid. They change on a day-to-day basis. And our educators are working harder than ever before in order to make sure that learning continues for students and their families.
I wonder if you've heard, and maybe this is an unfair question to catch off guard, but I wonder if you've heard any stories from your members about the particular challenges or achievements or victories that they've had, or maybe even just from your colleagues or former colleagues. Is there anything that's really stood out during these first few weeks of school that was especially noteworthy?
Yeah, so I will say a lot of our teachers in Plan C who are teaching remotely from home or even from their school building have shared stories, of course, of building relationships with their students in a much different way than we would traditionally be doing in a face-to-face setting. I observed a teacher by observing my own child in his virtual learning, and, you know, she was doing check-ins with students and asking them how they were doing, and my child and the other students in class were extremely engaged in learning. And we're also hearing, you know, stories of educators who are overwhelmed by the demands of what is being asked of them, particularly our teachers who are working in some Plan B school districts. Some of them have to teach in person to the students that are currently in their classroom and also teaching online to students who have opted for virtual learning. And so that requires an additional amount of preparation in order to make sure that they are delivering content effectively to both groups of students. And then also, you know, thinking about their own safety concerns and balancing that with the safety of students. And so it's been a mixed reaction, a mixed experience for educators all across the state.
Even before the pandemic, things were not great when it came to education funding in our state. We have lots of poorly paid educators. We have also lots of inadequate facilities. We know the stories of how teachers reach deeply into their own pockets to really take care of their kids. I take it that continues to be the case. The General Assembly came in and passed what it called a relief package, but the challenges are still remain very significant when it comes to the finances of our schools.
Yes, that's correct. You know, like you said, teachers on a regular basis have, you know, continue to dug deep into their own finances to supply resources and materials for students. Even teachers during this current pandemic, while, you know, school buildings are closed, they were doing donors choose grants to get remote learning packets for their students, fundraising on their own, going out and supplying kits of school supplies for students so that they could have materials at home so that they could participate in the activities during virtual learning. And so many of our educators are really facing the reality of being in school buildings, especially for those who are on Plan B, and receiving, you know, the PPE and necessary materials that we got from the state. But the concern is, as we approach cold and flu season and as we get further out into the school year, will that funding be adequate in order to make sure that we're protecting the health and safety of educators and students? But even in particular, you know, in light of the governor's announcement that school districts can move to Plan A, our educators and families alike here are now more concerned about contact and transmission and being exposed to COVID, because Plan A just removes some of the protective measures that were in place for Plan B.
Let's talk more about that. The governor has come out and taken another step to move us closer to returning to sort of the traditional model of in-person education. I know there have been a lot of concerns voiced by a lot of your members about their safety, the safety of the kids. So I guess this is going to devolve into sort of a district-by-district debate. Is that how you see this?
Yeah, so our primary role as educators is first to make sure that the health and safety of our students is met and cared for. And then, you know, we make sure that their academic needs are cared for. We hear all the time, Maslow's before Bloom. And so when our educators are talking about, you know, Plan A, you know, we're prioritizing, and like we always do, we center the needs of our students in our classroom. And we also have to center our needs as educators who have to deliver the instruction. So the safety is important. You know, one of our concerns that we have shared as NCAE is that Plan A removes the social distancing component, only requires masks. And so, you know, we've seen educators and students already who are under the Plan B model, even with social distancing and masks, still contract COVID. And so we are extremely worried about our educators and our students going into school buildings. As like you said, the conditions of school buildings, the air quality, HVAC systems, all of that poses a risk to our educators and our students and ultimately our community safety.
Do you anticipate speaking out further on? I mean, will there be NCAE members perhaps at a local school board speaking out and saying, look, maybe it's legal to go to Plan A, but we really don't think our particular district is ready for that at this point. Is that possible that that could happen?
It's definitely possible. We encourage, you know, all educators, including our members, to get involved and contacting their local elected representatives, because they should hear and value the voices of the educators who have to put the plans that they recommend into practical action. You know, we've always encouraged that our educator voice should be valued as the expert professionals of those who run the day-to-day operations of school buildings. And so, yes, you will see our educators and our members mobilizing district by district, because just like when the announcement came in July, you know, that's exactly what our educators did. They looked at the metrics. They looked at the feasibility of how things would be implemented in their local school district. And, you know, they have very real concerns as educators without children, you know, thinking about their own safety, educators who are also parents who think about their safety, and parents who are supportive of their educators and community members who are supportive of their educators. And so it is a collective effort to make sure that we're prioritizing safety first.
Yeah, it's sort of striking how a lot of the decisions by our state and local leaders continue to be made often by boards and commissions and legislatures where they're meeting virtually because they want to protect their own safety, but they're not allowing that to stop them from sending our kids and our educators back to schools in person. It's a bit of a hypocrisy there, it would seem.
It is a little striking, and it is very noticeable to educators and parents alike. And that's why it's important to continue to have dialogue with our local elected officials and for them to really value and prioritize the voices of educators. It is very hard work. And of course, our educators want to be back face to face in the classroom with their students and making sure that we are assisting and helping our students learn and grow. But we also don't want to have to expose people unnecessarily to a virus that hasn't discriminated. You know, COVID has taken the lives of educators across our state. Unfortunately, students have contracted, and, you know, earlier in once we were closing school buildings over summer, we lost a child in Durham, if you will recall. And so we don't want to have to experience that without making sure that we can find a path. We hope that, you know, our scientists and our public health officials and medical professionals can help us as educators and school officials and our local legislative leaders can help us all work together to find a path to eradicating the virus. But we've placed a huge responsibility on schools to bring us back to normal. And that has been a very, very difficult challenge in this particular environment.
Coming to the end of our time with Tamika Walker-Kelly of the North Carolina Association of Educators, and there's not time for you, or this probably isn't the appropriate venue for you to list out all of your endorsements, but suffice it to say that NCAE is now and will be very active in the coming weeks in the 2020 election, viewing this as a really important election for the future of our public schools.
Yeah, so I will say that the election is critical for public education in general, because we want to make sure that our educators and our parents and our families go out and vote. You know, school reopening is going to be a huge topic as we look at, you know, how we engage around the election. And also just thinking long term about the needs that were exposed by the pandemic for our public schools as a way to make sure that we are putting individuals in place that are going to continue to support public schools, whether it be action on the Leandro case, making sure that educators continue to get funding in order to encourage people to come to the profession, to support our newest teachers coming into this profession. All of that is going to be critical to engage and turn out voters in this election here in North Carolina.
Well, we wish you all the best luck with that action and all the other efforts of your organization. Thanks for the service you provide to our state. We'll talk again soon. I hope you stay safe and take care, and good luck.
Thank you so much. You stay safe as well.
Coming up next, has the time for Medicaid expansion finally arrived in North Carolina? We'll hear what the latest polling says. Don't go away.